BBC Six Music Podcasts.
Six Music.
This is a free download from the BBC.
Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic.
And now, Adam and Joe.
Mr. Wolf Pants,
show me your pants. Bom, 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 bom. Make them a nice pair of blue shiny scans. Bom, 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 bom. Please turn on your laser beam in your pants. Mr. Wolf Pants,
bring Mr. Silt Pants.
Mr. Silt Pants, bring me a dream.
Silty Pants.
Who suggested that?
That was suggested by Benjamin Crawley. I'm not going to go into the details of his email. I don't think there's anything, not to disrespect him, of import to be read, but it was a good suggestion, and we hope we executed it to your satisfaction.
There's been enough disrespect of listeners in the live show.
There's been enough shouting in our intros as well. We did that in a very adult manner. It didn't turn into an awful bawling match.
No, exactly.
A bawling match? I meant that B-A-W-L, as in to cry, not B-A-double-L, which has a disgusting, smutty connotation.
Yes, football. So, listeners, welcome to this week's podcast. Thank you very much indeed for downloading it. And it's going to be the last sort of regular-ish podcast that we do for quite a while.
It's true, isn't it? We're sorry to announce, listeners, some of you might be happy, but we're off for a bit of a summer break in July and August, right?
Glastonbury is going to be the last time we're live on air for Six Music.
We're going away for the summer. It's like when, you know, on Saturday morning telly, Swap Shop used to stop, or CITV, or what was the ITV one called? Smash and Splosh used to stop, and they'd bring on another weird one. Do you know what I mean?
That's right.
It would be replaced by an odd sort of slightly regional version of it, or something that came from somewhere else in Britain. And the presenters
number 73
odd.
With Sandy Toksvig.
Yeah, it's like that. Who's going to replace us? Oh, actually, someone brilliant is going to replace
us. Danny Wallace.
Danny Wallace. So he'll probably do a superior show, and you'll never hear from us again.
Yeah.
That's highly feasible. But anyway, this is the last normal sort of a podcast. Next week, I think we've got a bit of a double podcast treat for you, potentially, from Glastonbury. And then even while we're away, don't forget that our blog will remain alive. So if you, for some weird medical reason, feel a sort of jonesing for our particular brand of bullies, you can pop to bbc.co.uk/blogs/Adam and Joe to update your nugget basket with some extra vittles.
And then after the Glastonbury podcasts, there will be a regular Song Wars classic podcast each week. We've recorded 7 special podcasts for you.
Special.
Going over old Song Wars basket and chatting about them as if they were like from classic albums in a ridiculous way.
Yes, but it'll also be your chance, if you're that way inclined, to get hold of some old Song Wars tracks in pure MP3 form.
Yes, because as well as the podcast, they'll be available as MP3s on the blog. So there's all that to look forward to, right? Anyway, let's get on with this week's podcast. It was a pretty demented show, as always. Little Scrappy here. Little
Scrappy-Doo.
Scrappy-Doo there.
Do you like Scrappy-Doo?
Hate you, Scrappy-Doo!
There you go. That's all anyone wants. Enjoy it. We'll be back in a second.
Watch out, it's Adam and Joe, coming from space to your brain. They got a little pack of highlights from the Six Music Show for you to hear again.
They got rid of all of the music, and the bits were incredibly crappy. So now there ain't a whole lot left, but hopefully enough to keep you happy. Here we go.
So welcome, listeners. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. I'm Adam.
I'm Joe. Are we panned left and right then?
But my mum pointed out, you know, that's meaningless to her because she's just got a little DAB with one speaker.
Right.
So she can't tell who's who.
Well, they can imagine us like Zaphod Beeblebrox.
I was thinking of doing the show with a Jamaican accent this week. That's not going to be offensive, is it?
Yes.
Because that would help people tell who's who. Aritmon, it's Adam from Adam and Joe. Like that. That's not a problem. Is it?
I don't know. It smacks slightly of problems.
Do you think dodgy area?
Sort of entering into the arena of the Davidson.
It's one of the problem accents, isn't it?
Yeah.
Steer clear.
Steer clear.
All right, then I won't do that one. But I don't know any other accents that well.
Yes, you do. French.
Oh, that's true. Thank you for reminding me.
You see, immediately we're transported to leafy France.
Leafy France. Welcome to France. Would you? Voulez-vous? No.
I didn't say transported to leafy France. I said leafy French.
Leafy French?
Yes.
That's nice. Would you like a baguette? We eat them.
Yes.
Onions.
Okay. What about a Chinese accent? No, but that's dodgy again.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's weird.
It's slightly arbitrary, isn't it, these rules? We don't really understand them, but I just get the sense that that would be dodgy.
Yeah.
With the French, it's fine.
It's absolutely fine
with
the French.
It's open season on the French.
Why is it? Is it because the French themselves tend to be a little on the racialistic side sometimes?
No. It can't be to do with that.
Obviously, that's not the reason.
An Irish accent.
Idiot hole.
An Irish accent.
That's problematic as well, isn't it? I think all accents... French is the only one. An Australian.
And New Zealand, mate.
And New Zealand.
They can take anything. It's just to do with the robustness of the nation.
Exactly.
Is it?
That's right. It's to do with...
how sensitive they are.
It's to do with how likely they are to punch you in the face if you meet them and you antagonise them. And the French... that's not to say that, like, any other nation couldn't stand up for themselves in a fight.
That sort of is what we're saying.
Well, it's ludicrous, isn't it? Like, a Chinese person is just as likely to wallop you if he's offended as a French person.
Outside my tiny little cafe in Paris, you'll find two men called Adam and Joe. All day they sit just talking away. Sometimes I listen and hear what they say. Blah, 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 waffles. Blah, 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 pancakes. They're making a podcast apparently. It sounds like a load of old crap to me. Oh, I am making the joke.
I had an amazing idea last week.
Well done.
And you know that thing, Google Earth?
Sure, it's amazing.
I thought, wouldn't it be cool to have a single button that you clicked on that told you exactly, so you could locate your house precisely, and then you click one button and it would tell you what was on exactly the other side of the world.
Right.
Exactly who lived there, or like what building was there. I thought, that's a brilliant idea, Cornballs. You're in the money.
Yeah.
Is that a good idea?
It is really
good
idea.
You don't like it, do you?
No, I do. I don't see the point.
It's just an exciting thing that would be exciting.
To think about what's on the other side of the world.
Yeah, because if you've got like an imagination, that was a little bit of a dig there.
It was, wasn't it?
It was an angry dig. You could dig.
Wasn't even gnomic.
You'd think about how far you could dig, you know, down in the earth. If you own a house, sometimes you think, well, how much beneath it do I own?
Yeah.
You know, do
I'm
I own
still
the
reeling
soil
from the dig.
All the way down? But then I looked on the internet and I realized that actually very few places in the world, if you dig through, do you get solid earth. Mm. It's mostly just water. Yeah? If you're in South America, you're quite lucky.
Mm-hmm.
You can dig through and I think maybe you get a bit of Japan.
Well,
or something like that. But most of the world, if you dig through, it's just water.
Is it? I thought there was caverns and stuff with crystals and dinosaurs.
Oh, in the middle. Well, in the middle of the earth. Yeah, well, you just watch the film The Core for that.
Exactly.
That gives you a scientifically accurate depiction of what's in the center of the world.
Computer-generated bubbles.
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 And Hilary Swank.
And a load of crystals.
So that was an idea. I thought for a moment, for about half the week, I thought, this is a brilliant idea. Google are going to really go with it, and it's going to become the new phenomenon. You know, kids will love it.
It's a good...
kids love that kind of thing, you
know?
Do
you ever think of...
cross-sections, geography?
Sure. Well, I guess you could link it to the phrase, you know, on the other side of the world. That phrase.
What sort of a phrase is that?
I wonder what's going on. That's not a phrase, you see. I don't know. He was literally on the other side of the world from me. Mm. I'm trying to big up your idea.
I appreciate the efforts, man. I really thought that was a brilliant idea for Google. It was
brilliant. Exactly
the kind of thing that could catch on. For a week, everybody would be doing it, and they'd be going around boasting.
Sure.
They'd be writing letters to the person who lived exactly on the other side of the world.
Your opposite neighbour.
Be like a twin town or something.
Right, your global opposite neighbour.
It would give you a set. You could make them a pen pal.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been like wildfire. It would have been really... it would have caught on.
That's if there's anyone living there.
Some money out of
you might just be living opposite a large area of
opposite.
Sea.
I like that. That's a good phrase. Uh-huh. I live opposite them.
Yeah.
Because it makes it sound like they're near, but actually...
or you might just be opposite like a big sewage works or something.
Most people are just opposite ocean.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And that's just a little factoid.
Do you ever think of applications for iPhones and things like that?
No.
Do you not?
No. Have you thought of one?
Well, no, I'm just amazed that, because most of the applications available are so utterly rubbish, like especially the free ones.
Okay, I've thought of one.
What?
It tells you who lives on exactly the other side of the world.
Well, you see, that's the kind of thing. That's better than the average free application you get.
Yeah.
Like, for example, this week when I was at work, there was people frantically downloading applications to amuse themselves throughout the day, right? Mm. And there was one guy who was going around saying, look at this, I've downloaded the Sexy Alphabet. And it's an application, right?
Yeah.
Which is just the alphabet laid out like a keyboard.
Yeah.
You press whichever letter you're after, and it's just a woman's voice saying, hey, F.
That sounds good.
X. G. You know?
Can you make her say a whole word sexily?
No.
Just the letters?
Yeah.
Would you pay for that?
I think that was a free one.
Was it?
But what the hell? You know, someone has had that idea, thought, this is a good idea, the sexy alphabet. A lady would be saying the words just in a lady's voice. I'm going to turn this into an iPhone application. This is the beginning of an amazing new chapter for me and my ideas.
I downloaded one that's, the stupidest one I've got is a heat pad.
Right.
And you put your fingers on it and it glows. Have you got that one?
No. And that's it, is it?
Yeah, it's rubbish.
I've got bubbles, right? And when you pass your fingers across the screen, some bubbles appear. And if you tip the phone, the bubbles will sink down to where you're tipping the phone.
Rubbish.
Rubbish. My baby likes it.
Really?
A little bit.
I think my Google one's a goer. I was feeling bad about it.
I mean my wife.
Okay.
My baby really likes it.
A lot of babies in your life.
Just talking.
Possible Text the Nation topic here, right? Now, I was reminded of this by an incident that occurred to me a few weeks ago, but I will fill you in about this thing that happened a few years back now. And I was sat down at work, and there was a guy sat next to me, and a lady came over, and he said, and he was making to stand up and offer her the seat, right? And she said, oh, no, you're all right, you sit down. And almost immediately, he laid his hand on her tummy and he said, no, you should sit down in your condition.
That's nice of him.
And she said, I'm not pregnant. So, and I was sat right next to them and I was absolutely mortified. Like I felt like I had literally been turned to stone, because obviously in that situation the woman would be upset.
What sort of environment was this? A party or
no? This is work environment.
A work environment.
Yeah,
everybody needed a bit of a sit down to rest their legs.
Yeah,
there was a limited number of chairs.
That's right.
He thought he was being chivalrous.
Uh huh.
Because he thought she was pregnant.
Not only was he being chivalrous, but he was being really, you know, he was sort of wanting to bond with her at that moment.
Yes.
And enthuse with her about the happy arrival of the baby.
Yes.
Unfortunately, there was no baby forthcoming.
Mm. It was merely the happy departure of several cakes.
Yeah. So it was a terrible moment. I mean, she didn't even look. The thing is that it was kind of mad of him, because she didn't even really look pregnant, right?
Right.
But he'd gone for it anyway. And he just made that bad call.
He made a very bad call.
And so I was sat there right next to the bad call. And I just didn't know what to do. I was sort of thinking, this is awful. This is absolutely awful, because she's probably mortified. And he is doubly mortified.
Yeah.
Right? The thing is that they had to go through this ritual of just carrying on speaking to each other.
Yes. Because you don't... I suppose... Naturally, you would just go, oh, my God, I'm such an idiot hole.
Yeah.
This is awful. I'm going to pop off and kill myself.
Right.
That's sort of what you want to do, but you don't. You have to feel you have to soldier on, make light of it.
Yeah. Both of them, I would imagine, as you say, wanted to scurry away and hide in a corner for a long time and not speak to anyone.
Yes.
But instead, they had to tough it out, especially as I was sat next to them like a lemon. So they kind of went through the motions.
Were you laughing, or were you?
My face was absolutely expressionless. Like it didn't crack in the least, because I just thought, if I make any expression right now, it's going to be the wrong one, and it's going to give away the fact that I am currently dying inside.
Mm.
So I just didn't even move my head. I was absolutely motionless, like a statue. To the extent that I was sort of, the logic was, I'm going to pretend that I've just zoned out. Mm. I'm just meditating. Mm. This is the kind of guy I am. I like to meditate. I'm just staring at a speck of dust at the other side of the room there. I'm not even aware of what's going around me. Certainly not the unbelievable car crash that just occurred a second ago there when you asked if she was pregnant, more or less. And so they go through the motions of like chatting and so, you know, what are you doing later on?
So they just switched instantly into onto another topic.
Yeah, totally. Don't even discuss. Don't even go there.
As
don't
if
even...
it had meant nothing to either of them.
Right, right. That's not a problem. Yeah,
that's a good tactic.
People offer an incorrect pregnancy diagnosis all the time. Let's talk about something else now.
Both adults.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not
no
big deal.
No one's taking any offence.
It's absolutely fine. They chatted for a while, and I was really thinking I've got to do something.
Was there a relaxed atmosphere during the subsequent chat?
It was pretty good, but you could hear they were breathing in all the wrong places. So they were clearly both absolutely rattled, and I was thinking to myself, I've got to do something. I've got to be like Gandhi in this situation and smooth the waters. And my what would you do? Like, would you?
Oh my God, I've been shot.
Yeah, would you say something? Because I was thinking maybe the best thing to do now is say, wow, that was bad and a bit awkward for both of you guys, but you know, you shouldn't be upset because you don't look pregnant. I don't know what he was thinking, because he shouldn't have said that, and you must be mortified because you made the incorrect pregnancy diagnosis.
Yeah.
And but you know, don't worry about it, kind of thing.
So your question is for tactics for dealing with situations like that.
Well, what happens, because the other thing that happened to me recently, right, and this again I observed, was this guy went up to someone, very similar thing, and he just launched in, and she really didn't look pregnant this time, and he launched in with, oh, well, congratulations, when's it due, right? And this has happened to a lot of people. And she had a little tummy on her, but nothing really to speak of. Certainly not enough for a congratulations, when's it due? So he goes in with congratulations, when's it due? And then realizes before she's really said anything, like he properly checks her out. She looks mortified. He realizes that he's insane. So then he starts going, congratulations, when's it due? Like trying to make noises that sound like he's singing something that sounds a bit like congratulations, when's it due?
So she's misheard.
Yeah.
She's like hallucinating.
Right. She's like, what do you mean? I'm not pregnant. What do you? I didn't say you were. I was just singing congratulations, when's it due.
That's a good tactic.
Congratulations, when's it due. Congratulations, when's it due. That kind of thing.
That's a good idea.
To make her feel insane. So I'm curious about other situations like that that are absolutely mortifying that you try and wriggle out of somehow.
Yes, tactics for... So we need to sort of hear the embarrassing moment.
Yeah.
And then the technique you use to try and cover it up, to recover.
I mean, maybe you didn't. Maybe you didn't successfully
damage limitation.
Out of it, right?
Maybe you made it worse.
I'm curious about all those situations. Because these things you see in shows like The Office and Peep Show, and, you know, they're a staple for comedy writers, those moments.
Mm-hmm. And Ricky Gervais especially.
Yeah, and you
those
sort of think...
moments.
Right, and you think, those can't happen in real life. But they do, they continue to happen. I think everyone makes... I reckon a lot of men make the incorrect pregnancy diagnosis once in their lives.
Right.
And thereafter, they are never going to do it again. Because the logic is, like, from their point of view, they want to be nice, right? It's a moment of empathy and reaching out, and they sort of think, I'm going to show off about the fact that I'm so observant and sensitive that I've noticed you're pregnant, and I'm going to congratulate you, talk about it. But then to even go a step further and lay your hand on the tummy, which is something that some women don't even like very much, is just
being
madness.
Touched on the tummy.
Madness. Well, yeah, because some men think that they're allowed to touch women on their pregnant bellies. I always thought that was a bit stepping over the line.
That's a different subject, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, that's Text the Nation for this week. We've even got a jingle. We've got a new jingle.
Have we not played any kind of a jingle yet?
Not yet, no, because I've been rambling.
It's going to confuse people. This is made by James, who lives in Barnaul in Russia. He says, I only listen to the podcasts. We don't have Six Music here. So if by chance you use it in the live show, can you please make a recording of it for me? We'll stick it in the podcast. This is the Russian Text the Nation jingle.
Text the Nation.
Six.
What if I don't want to?
Six.
Can I use an email? Is that a problem?
No, it's not a problem. Text.
That's really Russian,
good, isn't
that
it? He is. I got his name wrong. Sorry. When he said James, he was referring to our producer. His name is Alexei Parfionov. He's going to be happy with the way I've read that, isn't he?
talking.
If you're a regular listener to the show, you might have heard last week we played a kind of abridged version of an episode of The Archers to highlight the amount of sighing that goes on in that very popular Radio 4 soap opera. Just as a reminder, here it is. This is all from one episode of The Archers, and I just took out everything, pretty much everything, that wasn't a sort of a world-weary sigh.
Dramatic breathing.
Yeah, dramatic breathing. And this is, it ended up sounding quite filthy, like a sort of very filthy episode of The Archers where there wasn't a lot of talking. It was pure action.
Just loving.
Have a listen.
Thanks. Anyway.
Tom.
Brenda.
Right.
Oh, hey.
Very satisfied residents.
Strange. Is it just me, or do all sighs sound as if they are somehow connected with the toilet area?
What do you mean by the toilet area?
The trouser zone.
The trouser zone. Okay. I'd say there were two separate areas. There was a toilet area and the bedroom area. But is your bedroom in the toilet? Is that where you sleep?
No, I was I was identifying a part of the body as the toilet area.
Oh, right. Good. Okay. Well, I was very excited to see that we got a letter from the producer of The Archers, Kate Oates, who says the following. It was with a mixture of delight and sorrow that I listened to Joe's abridgment of The Archers last week. Delight that our actors have finally been recognised by Six Music as being capable of carrying dramatic storylines through the medium of sighing. And sorrow that Adam, despite his best and brave efforts, couldn't quite reach the bar set by our actors.
What?
Because last week, after playing that clip, I then auditioned Adam, who, as you will know, is a professional actor.
Yeah.
Having appeared in several major feature films. I auditioned him on sighing. I thought he did extremely well. Maybe not as well as you did in the grunting the previous week.
Come on. I was drinking some tea and then sighing in all kinds of different ways. That kind of thing.
Might be a bit big, that's all.
It's not big.
And I think, I'm not sure whether Kate Oates, the producer of The Archers, thought you were any good either. In fact, I think she thought you didn't do very well. She goes on to say, I would like to reassure Adam and encourage him not to lose heart at this early hurdle. She's suggesting that you fell over the hurdle. Many of our actors have been sighing for almost 60 years, and many of our younger performers have completed extensive and exhaustive training in, capital letters, emotional exhalations. Mm-hmm. It was clear that Adam gave his best efforts on Saturday, and we were moved. Now get this. As a gesture of thanks, we'd be only too happy to offer some coaching at the hands of one of our more experienced actors or directors if Adam feels like he would like to increase his capabilities in this area. Alternatively, we'd be delighted to invite Adam into the studio to take part in an episode.
Ooh.
Not as a fully fledged character.
What?
You understand. Brackets, the audition that he provided on last week's show simply wasn't up to scratch, I'm afraid. Close brackets. But as a background sire.
Oh.
A disgruntled customer in the Bull, perhaps, or a weary churchgoer in St. Stephen's. The choice is yours. Many thanks for your kind mention on the programme. We were delighted by the tribute. Best wishes, Kate Oates. Now, Kate, I've got to side with Count Buckley's here, because he is an experienced big-screen feature film actor.
Professional. I mean, you can't call me a trained actor, certainly.
He's been in
certainly.
Hot Fuzz, Stardust.
Or even a good actor.
What was the other one?
Son of Rambo.
Son of Rambo. Very, very good film.
Let's not forget The Lowdown.
And The Lowdown. Exactly. We're both in that. And to say that he would be underqualified to... You know, he'd only be qualified enough to sigh in the background.
Plus, you
know, very
insulting. I've done radio drama. I did the Yellow Plush Papers at the beginning of this year. You could have heard on Radio 4.
Have you done a Spotify advert? Everyone seems to be...
That's true.
That.
I'm an experienced voiceover artist.
Other
I could sigh for England, woman!
Yeah, so
is that too aggressive?
We're insulted. Well, you might flip out on the set.
Right.
Is it? It's not done live, The Archers, is it? It's pre-recorded, so they could just edit your freakouts out.
The only way I would do it, right... is if I could choose the level of sighing myself.
I think you should play a local posh landowner who has bought a mansion in the village of, what's it called?
Ambridge.
And you just come in for one episode very haughtily and maybe romance a couple of ladies. But you're sort of in and out.
Right.
In the romancing stakes.
Yeah.
And then, it's a one episode only cameo.
Sure.
That has a major impact. So I think on those terms, yes, Adam would be prepared to be in the episode.
You see, I think she's not really thinking about something like that.
No, I want us to write the episode.
Yeah.
I'd like them to give us the Archer's Bible, which gives you the guidelines of the characters, so it fits into the ongoing storyline. But then we write a special letter in which Count Buckley's arrived in Ambridge.
And I would be called Count Buckley.
You would.
And I don't think that would throw off the seriousness of the
show. Well, it would be tonally interesting. You'd be much broader than their usual characterizations.
Right.
There'd be a lot of Rufty.
There'd be loads of Rufty.
Ooh, you're a good-looking woman. Get out here. Oh!
What's happening then?
I don't know. Just use your imagination. That's the wonder of radio, though, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
It would be a fruity character.
So on those terms, Buckley's is prepared to appear on your programme.
I've slipped. My trousers have come off. Oh, it's a lovely day. I'll be off good with you.
Exactly.
That would be fine.
That would really lift the ratings, I think. So that's a proposition for you there, Kate. Otherwise, the deal's off. But nevertheless, thank you very much for your kind letter and tolerating our Mickey taking.
Who's been on my field?
Adam's really great and he's wonderful. Joe is really, really, really brilliant.
They're fantastic.
But which one is the best?
It's Adam. Hey, so listen, man. Listen to me.
I'm listening.
Did you hear about this woman in the States who was fined $2 million for file sharing?
They're making an example of her.
They certainly are.
I don't agree with that approach to life.
What the heck is that?
Don't make examples of people.
But I don't understand. Surely if she's...
So treat them fairly.
Here's the details, right? They are trying... The RIAA... What does that stand for, incidentally?
The Recording Industry A-Hole Academy.
There you go.
Is what it stands for.
The RIAA is trying to teach people a lesson about illegal file sharing, what they call piracy, of course, through our judicial system. And they have fined this woman from Minnesota. She's called Jamie Thomas Rassett. Jamie? Anyway, she's been saddled with a $1.92 million fine for sharing 24 songs. That's $80,000 fine per song.
Does it say by what artist?
I think it was Beyoncé.
Beyoncé
and her fiancé. Yes, I think it was Beyoncé that she was uploading to a file sharing site. I think she's done it before, but I don't think like she does like it.
Right.
She doesn't do it in huge numbers and stuff. She's not selling these things illegally or anything like that. And she's been, like, she doesn't seem that fazed by it. It was the second time it had been in court. The first time she had a slightly smaller fine. And this time she appealed and they upped the fine.
Well, they did this to a lot of people, didn't they? And most people settled out of court for about $1,000, but she stood her ground.
And the jurors were not satisfied. The jurors didn't believe that Thomas Rassett's denials of illegal file sharing were true, and they were angry with her.
The jury were angry. She's being provocative.
Decided to be harsh. I mean, that's
I wonder what's her argument?
Your argument would be, well, everyone does it. Why is it a big problem? You know, I'm still, like, investing in other media.
So what your argument's going to be?
When I get my $2 million fine. Well, I don't upload music illegally.
No, of course not.
And I don't recommend anyone else does.
No.
But, you know, if you're doing that, compared to some of the things that people do wrong in the world, that seems like one of the more minor crimes. So if this woman actually has to pay out this fine, right?
Yes.
Which it seems she does because it's been handed down by the court. That's going to destroy her life completely, presumably.
Possibly.
Mother of four from Minnesota. Thought. She's not a wealthy woman. She's just an ordinary woman, I think. So what happens in that situation? All your possessions are taken away? What? I mean, I don't understand.
Well, her only choice is to launch a Beyoncé-style singing career.
Right.
That, I think, is why Beyoncé herself went into music, because she downloaded another R&B singer's tracks and was massively in debt.
Yeah.
So she was forced to launch a highly successful booty-shaking R&B career.
Yeah.
As a result, she's now cleared the debt and she's considerably into profit.
Uh-huh.
So look out for the first album by what's her name?
Jamie Thomas Rassett.
Yeah. She will be doing some stadium tours and appearing at the O2 Arena soon.
She's said... She said outside the courtroom, she described the fine as kind of ridiculous and expressed resignation over the decision.
Mm.
She also added, there's no way they're ever going to get that. She says, I'm a mum of limited means, so I'm not going to worry about it now. So I admire her detachment, but surely she's going to be forced to worry about it at a certain point.
When they come a knocking.
Yeah. I mean, it's just distressing. The whole thing freaks me out really badly.
Why?
Well, because I do some things wrong in my life. am I going to get a £2 million fine for all of them?
This was your response to the MP's expenses as well. Oh, no, we've said those words.
What did I say?
You said that you sometimes fiddle your expenses.
No, I didn't.
It was a similar sort of response in that you were saying, you know, what if it happened to you? What if it happened to me? And it seems like an over-the-top reaction for a small infringement of a relatively minor infringement.
I don't think I said exactly that, because there are some aspects of the MP fiddling thing that are...
But you're right, that's a gross overreaction. I'm on both sides of the court, you know? I think it's right, yeah, on the one hand that she should be sued, and on the other hand, I also think that it's wrong. Okay?
Judge Cornballs.
In a way, it's right. In a way, it's wrong. So what she's got to do is spend half of every day in prison. Just from 9 till noon. And then she's allowed to go wherever she wants. But she has to be back in prison at midnight.
That's right.
Yeah. Is that fair enough?
That's absolutely.
Yeah?
Man, you're the best, Judge Cornballs.
I am, aren't I?
Text the nation. Text, text, text. Text the nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
Desk joke.
I'm just chuckling away. That was genuine at a text that I'm going to read out in a second.
Genuine chuckle from Joe. Joe did something genuine there, listeners. That's quite exciting, isn't it? And it's time to get into Text the Nation, which this week is all about hideously embarrassing moments that you've had, and particularly the things you've done to try and gloss over them, extricate yourselves from them, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Here is one from Matt in London, Matt Walton. He says, a few years ago, I was walking through Hitchin Town Centre, where I lived at the time. It was shortly before Armistice Day, and I hadn't already bought a poppy. As I crossed the square, I noticed an old war veteran stood in the corner selling poppies from a little tray round his neck. I walked up to him to purchase one. He was proudly done up in his military regalia, and even, I think, had some medals hanging from his chest. I reached into my pocket to find some change. What I pulled out was a big handful of coppers, 5 pences, the odd 10 pence, but nothing very much to speak of. Embarrassed that I'd already started the purchase process, but only had an insultingly small amount of funds to offer in return for the poppy, I apologised. "Sorry about the shrapnel," I said. He gave me a very odd look. I suddenly realised what I'd done, but by now I had the poppy half pinned to my jacket. I scuttled off as quickly as I could into the nearest shop. I felt awful, but couldn't help but laugh. I hope the veteran felt the same.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
So that's a good, embarrassing, awful, compromising situation. His tactic there, Matt's tactic, was to scuttle into nearest shop, the running away tactic.
That's fair enough, isn't it? It's one of my favourite tactics for dealing with those situations.
Just leave and let the world turn. Let the next event, you know, take over in the person's mind.
The problem is that it comes back to you. Those moments come back to you and make your blood run cold.
They do tend to haunt
you. No amount of scuttling will stop the haunting.
It's true. Tim on the Wirral. I think he's a regular texter. I'm sure we've read out one of Tim's before, but here's a good one. I'm a paramedic, and some years ago I was asked to take a pregnant woman who was in labour to the labour suite. She was full term and the birth was imminent. When she answered the door, I asked her how far apart her contractions were. Quote, "It's not me you're here for, it's my daughter," came the reply. I asked her, and this is good, I asked her to close the door so that I could knock and start over. She duly complied, we pretended nothing had happened, and got on fine.
That's great.
So that's a very good. Just you request that you rewind as if and just repeat the action.
Yes.
That's probably actually a genuinely good psychological technique for erasing a memory.
That's very good, because that acknowledges that there has been something appalling said and done, right? And that there's embarrassment on both sides. And you sort of express regret by saying that and just literally say, can we just rewind? That's very good. Good old Tim.
Here's another good technique from Steve in Coventry. I go rock climbing at an indoor walk. You all right?
Just having a little scratch. Is that illegal now? Am I going to get a $2 million fine?
Very noisy jacket, you know? You can't do that sort of thing during a recording of The Archers, for instance.
It's my new jacket
from
my wife.
That would be an entire plot point.
What are you saying about my wife's choice of jacket?
Count Buckley gets a new jacket. Your wife's bought you a very radio-unfriendly jacket.
It does happen to be made of a material that's sort of
extremely
waterproof.
Extremely noisy. It's the radio equivalent of a newsreader wearing one with, you know, stripes that interfere.
Strobing stripes. Makes me sound like an action hero.
Where were we? Stephen Coventry. I go rock climbing at an indoor wall in Warwick. It's a great place to climb, but also attracts a certain kind of beautiful woman.
Lady climbing ladies.
A woman. Sometimes if me and my mate Jan see one come in, we can be a bit tactless and say something like, oh, she's got a nice bum, a bit too loud. If I think she could have heard us, I usually follow with something like, and she was great in Transformers. What was she in before that?
Nice.
That's good, isn't it?
Very good diversionary tactic.
It's only quite specific context you could use that in. Like, you couldn't have employed that. The guy in your story couldn't have employed that.
No, with the incorrect pregnancy diagnosis. Once you've laid your hand on someone's tummy.
That's the best one, a sort of grammatical or linguistic switch that makes the person think they've just misunderstood the sentence.
Yeah.
If you can mangle the grammar somehow, or make the sentence longer and somehow get out of it with the use of skilled sentence construction or tense manufacturing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's, I didn't say when are you due. I said, when are you Jewish?
When are you due to take a train again? You haven't ridden on a train recently.
And I was just the reason I put my hand on your belly was I can't control that hand. And you've brought it up again. I can't believe you would. Bye.
Sting.
Do you know that show Wife Swap, Adam?
Sure, I do.
On Channel 4.
It's been going... the show with the voiceover guy who says everything in exactly the same way.
It's been going for a while now, and I'm worried that the format's a bit tired.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, it's a classic format, though.
Well, I've thought that maybe I've come up with an idea for a new twist, an idea for an episode. Do you want to hear it?
Sure.
This week on Wife Swap, an Anglican priest from Shropshire who loves fell walking and lives without electricity swaps wives with an Anglican priest from Derbyshire who loves fell walking and lives without electricity. There's one big dramatic difference. One couple's dog is called Pongo and the other couple's dog is called Bongo.
Oh, man. How are they going to cope?
I know. Could you think that would be an exciting episode?
Well, they'd get confused about calling the dog.
Household one. I'm just going out fell walking. Wife. Can I come too? Yes, of course. Let's take the dog. Okay, come on, Pongo. Oh, no. I called him Pongo instead of Bongo. But look, he's coming anyway. Cut to the other house. You just get exactly the same thing at the other house.
Carrie has incorrectly called her dog Pongo. Where actually, his name is Bongo.
Would that be a good episode?
Meanwhile, in the other house, Pongo is doing well and has been called by his master. Is that the kind of thing you're...
Yeah, thinking? Yeah. Hmm. I mean, that would be the only possible source of friction. Other than that, it would just be lovely. They'd both fit in very well, and they'd go on. They'd have what lovely fell walking.
Joe, man, you know the point of the show is the friction.
Yeah, but my point is the friction's tiring. You know, the other week it was Rona Cameron and some sexist comedian, and it's just the second you hear it, it's tiring. You just think, I just know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah.
He's sexist, she isn't. He's going to make her angry. They'll be angry. You're not going to learn anything from this. It's just going to be, so why not have a nice one?
Yeah.
I mean, in a way, that would be more refreshing. Don't you think, the fell walking?
Well, you could kind of return it to the original sense of the title.
Yeah.
So it's a wife swap and it's just sexy.
It's all bedroom-based.
Yeah, and they all just fool around a little bit.
Do you think?
Yeah, because their marriage is getting...
They do tiptoe around
tired.
That, don't they? I mean, usually the idea that they might sleep with each other is a completely far-fetched because it's so abrasive.
Yeah.
They're opposites. They don't want to have anything to do with each other's lifestyles.
They just pair people up. They just pair up adventurous couples who want to spice up their marriage, and they fool around a little bit. What's the big deal?
What's the big deal? That's probably what would happen with the Anglican...
And you watch.
The Anglican priests and the fell walking.
The show is about watching people fooling around to spice up their marriage. What's the big problem?
None, according to Buckle's household.
We're not going to put it on in the afternoon, obviously. No. We'll put it on after 9. You can do anything after 9.
I think if they did another series and it integrated both of our ideas... Very similar people who get on very well.
Yeah.
And a bit of nookie.
Yeah.
It would, the ratings would rocket.
Carol and Roger have brought out a packet of peanuts and undressed in the living room.
packet of peanuts.
That's what they do at those things.
Is that the really? That's the first. That's the sort of entree.
Yeah. Why swapping? They have peanuts and stuff like
really?
That.
Really, it's important to have salty fingers.
I'm a funny person. I often make up jokes. My jokes are more amusing than those of other folks. When you hear my joke, I think you'll find that you agree. Come on, you're all invited to a made-up joke party.
Do you remember a lady called Miss Taylor who sent in that rootitoot joke that we laughed at?
Yes.
Now, many people were furious about that, weren't they? Because saying that's a very old joke. And I think we've got to be, you know, first of all, acknowledge those people. You're right. It obviously is a very old joke. And we were wrong to read it out, even though it was funny. But we need to be stricter with our criteria. Do you know, we need to sniff out the old ones a bit better.
Well, sometimes people feel as if they've arrived at those things themselves, legitimately. You know what I mean? I think I've never heard rootitude before. I thought that was funny.
You're still chuckling.
Yeah, it's good.
Here's one from Joe Gulcher in Bingley. What do you call projectile phlegm that flies out of the mouth of heavy metal singers?
Air guitar.
Come on, that's good.
That is quite good. All right, here's a similarly themed one, right? And this is from Steve Woolard. He's a Welshman living in Banff, Canada. Hi, Adam and Joe, long-time fan, first-time pest. I'm pretty sure I made this joke up myself, and I think it's a corker. Where are you taken to if you get injured in the crowd of a heavy metal concert?
Oh, I don't know.
A moshpital.
Nice.
Hey!
That's good. Here's one from Chris. What do you call a man who jumps from a roof onto your window ledge, looks through your window, then runs away along your drainpipe before somersaulting onto a passing bus? A nosy parkour.
Parkour.
Yes.
Running.
That's definitely, it's so contemporary. Yes. It can't be an old one. That's a contemporary phrase. That's why that passes muster.
Here's a message, Chris, from Nick Turner. We were complaining last week about the fact that Joe's Apprentice song was not played on The Apprentice.
Damn.
And Nick Turner says, well, dear Adam and Joe, sorry that your hopes of having your Song Wars song, Joe, played on The Apprentice were so cruelly dashed. Mm. Now you know how I feel. I sent you guys a joke ages ago that I had carefully crafted for your enjoyment, and I convinced myself you'd read it out on the show. By the time Saturday came around, I was sure I'd hear you chortling over my joke. But no, I listened to the show on the iPlayer again just in case I missed it, but it wasn't there. I checked the podcast, but again, no luck. And each week since then, the same routine, as I convinced myself that you either saved it up or rediscovered it after dropping it on the studio floor. And here was the joke. So we finally found it, Nick. I'm going to read it out for you right now. Are you ready? My wife is doing a new exercise class. It involves walking along pieces of wood to improve your inner body balance. It's called Pirates. Pirates.
You see, that's definitely made up, but is it good enough? I mean, he just bullied you into reading it out there.
I felt sorry for him. Pirates. It doesn't really, because there's no way of pronouncing it so that it sounds like pirates.
That's good, though. There's something good about that. I mean, how many times have you said it now?
Pirates.
Like 6, 7.
Pilates.
8.
Pirates. They don't even sound the same. Pilots. They're
Pirates.
They're spelled the same.
Would be good.
Written down, it works, but when you say it out loud, it's nonsense.
I think the one I've got here, this could be really old.
Pirates.
Caroline from Scarborough. This is my favourite ever joke. I normally manage to mess up the punchline. It's still a winner. What do you call a Frenchman wearing sandals?
Oh, I don't know.
Philippe.
Hey.
Come on, that's quite good. I bet that's old. I'm referring that for you know, we're going to send that to the joke detectives.
That's a good one. Here's one from, he says, Ringo Starr. Not really. Sam Leif Halverson in Gateshead. He says, please read this out, Dad, because remember you said you would. Please, 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 in capitals. You said, remember, please. This joke is my brainchild, born in the past few weeks. I'm very proud. What do you call an island full of Scottish comedians?
Oh, I remember this one.
Billy Colony.
I just think that's got to be old.
You reckon? So thanks very much indeed, Sam Leif Halverson in Gateshead.
Yeah, keep those made-up jokes coming in. You know, you can also contextualise them with stories of how you've tried to make people laugh.
Oh, I've got
failed.
One more quick one from Liz in Bath. How do hobbits dry themselves?
Oh, dunno.
Tolkien powder.
Hello, Pete Doherty here. Just like to say how much I enjoy listening to the Adam and Joe podcast. Whenever life's got me down, it always brings a chuckle to my face.
We're going to be there, of course, next weekend, Glastonbury that is, for the festival. Six Music will be there from dusk till dawn, bringing you the best of live music and all the action. We're going to be joined by Steve. I'm reading this off a sheet, but I'm trying to make it sound like I'm saying it off the top of my head. Is it working?
Good job, yes, yes.
Thanks
yes.
very much. We're going to be joined by Steve Lamack, Keris Matthews, Gideon Coe, Lauren, Laverne, Lozenger, the Loz Mistress, and the Six Music News team. If you're going, then hopefully we'll bump into you. Specifically, we'll be at the Cabaret tent, as I said earlier, on Saturday afternoon between 4 and 6, telling made-up jokes. So that's something to look forward to. If you're not going, don't worry, you won't miss a thing, because we'll bring you the results of what? The results of that one.
Of that one on one of our Glastonbury shows. Oh, dear.
You take over now. You take over. I've stopped talking naturally.
Next week, you can hear us on Friday from 9 p.m. with a special Adam and Joe Sunset show. And on Saturday, we'll be along from slightly... this is badly written. Look what it says here. On Saturday, we'll be along from slightly a later time of 11 a.m. And we have an extra show on Sunday morning from 11 a.m. as well. We also have an extra show, an extra show on Saturday night at 9 p.m. We're not very good DJs,
sorry,
are
James.
We? Our producer's
never
gone to all
to
the lengths to write this out. And now we're just being weird. Hopefully you'll want to enjoy the festival with Six Music on at home. If you go to the events page of the Six Music website, you'll find a Glastonbury party pack to help you get things started.
Don't say it like that.
I'm just laughing.
It's very
It's fun. It's party. I'm in a party mood.
First we insult the choir, then we insult
not,
the organisers of the party.
You exaggerated my
pack.
Insulting of the choir. I was just being... it's just fun and you've made it all sound awful. It's your fault. Michael and Emily Evis cut out masks. I just want to drop this piece of paper and run from the studio right now. What would happen?
Shall I take over this bit? Michael and Emily Evis cut out masks and an invite you can...
Even if we try and do it properly, that's not written.
Michael and Emily Evers cut out masks and an invite you can send to your friends. We'd love to see your photos while we are there.
It should have gone, Michael and Emily Evers cut out masks and an invite you can send to your friends. We'd love to see your photos while we are there. bbc.co.uk/6music/events. Do you think anyone has grasped any sort of information?
Maybe that we're going to be at Glastonbury, but apart from that, no.
Listen, just check out the website and you'll find all sorts of exciting Glastonbury stuff.
I like to listen to Adam and Joe, but I listen to the podcast, not the live show. I used to feel acute frustration because I couldn't join in with Text the Nation. But now my troubles have disappeared because Retro Text the Nation's here. And now my letter might be read out instead of thrown in the trash and forgotten about.
So last week's Text the Nation was about confrontations that have gone wrong and you have basically revealed yourself as something of an idiot hole. It was inspired by a contretemps I had with a traffic warden last week, which I was very ashamed about my behaviour of therein with which.
Yeah, that's right.
So here's a couple that we received during the week. This is from Steve Hodgson in Leeds. He's a regular listener, first-time emailer. Welcome, Steve. He says, hi, Adam and Joe. A couple of years ago, I was in the soup aisle in the supermarket looking for some minestrone, and a man was stood in the way.
The soup aisle?
Yeah.
Yeah, you said it like it was a pile of Sues.
Right, the soup aisle.
A big pile of women called Sue.
Susan Boyle.
You got any Sues?
Sue Perkins.
Yeah, they're over in the soup aisle.
Have you got Sue Perkins? She's over there next to Giles Corran. I was in the soup aisle, and there was a man blocking all of the soup. While he and his girlfriend stroke wife discussed which flavours to get. I was absolutely exasperated by his positioning, but didn't say anything in the great British way, he says in brackets. Instead, I just glared at the back of his head. His girlfriend stroke wife saw me and gently pulled her boyfriend stroke husband's arm so that he would move out of the way. I smiled at her, picked up my minestrone and walked off. I'd barely gone two steps when I heard the lady's voice as she spoke to her partner saying, he could have just said excuse me. Now, I'm not sure why I did what I did next. There's no rational explanation for it, and it's not something that I'm proud of. But I turned to the lady and opened and closed my mouth a couple of times, then waved my hand in front of my throat to imply that the reason I hadn't said excuse me was that I couldn't, because I was in fact mute. The colour drained from her face to bottom, just like in a cartoon. Taking slight satisfaction from her look of apologetic horror, I turned on my heels and continued my shop. Wow. Unfortunately, I kept passing the couple again and again as we made our ways up and down the aisles, so I had to maintain the facade of muteness throughout my shopping visit. I wanted to get some ham from the deli counter, but I couldn't because I would have had to speak, so I had to buy pre-packaged ham from the shelf instead. Unhappy emoticon. Then, when I got to the checkout to pay, the couple were at the checkout next to me. Now, normally I'm very polite at checkouts and I say please and thank you a lot, but not on this occasion. Would I like cash back? All I could do was shake my head. Then at the end of the transaction, the nice checkout lady said thank you, and I did a terrible, quite offensive and probably very patronising impression of a mute person trying to say thank you, put my bags in the trolley and left. I also wanted to pick up a lottery ticket from the kiosk, but I couldn't because I was sure that I didn't have the mime skills to ask for it. Oh, the shame. I've never done it again. Although the look on the lady's face was priceless. Steve Hodgson. So that's going to fairly extreme lengths.
It is. You've got to admire his ingenuity, though.
Yeah, to
and
win
following
a confrontation.
It through.
Exactly.
That's the kind of low behaviour we would encourage. Yeah. Here's one from Joseph Denson. He says, a couple of years ago, I was on the bus home from a shocking day at work. At the stop before I was due to get off, an elderly lady got on. Before I could offer her my seat, as I was getting off anyway, she barked loudly, can I sit there, please? Is that a good impression?
That's very good.
Yeah, it made her sound quite sort of evil. And,
exactly.
Yeah.
Old lady.
Giving everybody on the bus the impression that I was some sort of young, rude yob.
Oh.
Or so I imagined. I looked her in the eye and muttered, yeah, sure, in a passive-aggressive manner, before putting on the most outrageous limp when walking to the front of the bus, in order to try and get the other passengers on my side. As I was getting off, I turned to look at her horrified face, with almost everyone else shooting daggers at her. Brilliant. He'd made it appear as if she'd made a lame man have to stand up. Unfortunately for me, at this point, instant karma took hold, and my poor acting skills caused me to fall off the bus onto my backside. I ran down the street, not daring to look back, shaking in equal parts anger and embarrassment. I'll be honest, it wasn't the proudest moment of my life.
What a lunatic. Who's that from?
Joseph Denson. Running away, that's the only sensible option in a situation like that. Run!
Here's one from John somewhere near the Thames. He says, dear Adam and Joe, I was walking along by the Thames once when in the distance I spotted a large dog doing its business right in the middle of the narrow towpath. The dog was being watched by its owners, an elderly couple. Now, I was far enough away that as I approached the action, I had time to build up a rage as I thought, I bet they don't pick that up. They didn't. Yes, I thought to myself. Righteous indignation, and carried on happily walking in my direction, leaving the poo mine to be discovered by runners and children who frequent the area. Do you feel the rage?
I feel the rage.
Anyway, by the time our paths crossed, I'd built up a head of steam, but in true passive-aggressive style. Joe knows all about this, he says, after your encounter at the gig the other week. I calmly said, is it okay if I tread in that? To the couple.
Nice line.
Well, the man went mad. He started ranting about people like you and the like.
What?
I was not only surprised at his vitriol, but secretly overjoyed that he'd set the parameters of the confrontation.
Yes.
And remember, I was in the right too.
Yes.
So open the floodgates of poo-related anger. Cue revenge for all those humiliating incidents in past years. Finally, I'd caught one at it. I won't bore you with the ensuing few minutes. Suffice to say that it ended with me waving the poo in the old man's reddening face.
Yes.
And counting down from poo 5 to 1, at which point I was going to, well, cross the pooey line and throw it in his face. Fortunately, his lady wife stepped in and de-pooed the situation, although he and I never really resolved things, and the crazed ranting continued as we went our separate ways in front of the sizable crowd that had built up. In my head, they were chanting at me, do it, do it, do it! I had about an hour or so's walk to reflect on my behaviour, and I'm still not very pleased with it. I may have overreacted a smidge, but people who do this kind of thing must be stopped. At the end of the day, can I really be a winner? I picked up the poo. So he's sort of saying, who's the genius there? And he says, don't even get me started on litter. John from somewhere near the Thames. There you go. I mean, that's...
right behind you there, John. That's heroic behaviour.
I think that was all right. He didn't cross the line.
I would have smeared it in his face.
Would you really?
Yeah, not just thrown it, but like an extended window washing hand movement with the muck. That annoying. Oh, how people can do that.
That's horrible. It's absolutely the worst.
Thing. We're going to play you out now with a sort of response to a request I put out on the podcast last week. I was asking whether... like a local amateur choir would like to cover the retro Text the Nation jingle. Mm. And lo and behold, a local amateur choir has covered it. And this really is quite an extraordinary noise they make. I'm hesitating because I don't want to be in any way rude. And you'll understand when you hear the beautiful singing that they've supplied us with. Did I negotiate that all right?
Yeah.
I've sort of been rude now, haven't I?
A little bit.
Just by saying the word rude.
Damning with faint praise.
This is really beautiful.
This is good. I like the end.
Well, we're amazingly touched that a choir would go to those lengths. I mean, that's in a way, that's sort of an amazing avant-garde talent there, because they just seem sort of surgically a tiny, tiny bit off the note.
This one guy, I think, maybe who's a little off-key,
really?
And it's making it very dark-sounding.
Yeah, but it has got a certain resonance that's quite unique, don't you think?
You know what it reminds me of? Is the choir of mutant people underground who worship the bomb.
In Planet of the Apes.
Beneath
the Planet of the Apes, yes. Yeah. I was getting exactly the same thing. It feels like a dungeon, or the children locked under the castle in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. It feels like they're in bondage. And you can hear a skeleton sort of flop to the floor halfway through, as if the string that it's been hung on has finally frayed through. And the bones just clatter to the stone floor.
Every single one of that choir, aged 11 to 50, hates us now.
Is that really how old they are? Here's the letter.
Yeah.
Dear Adam and Joe, in response to your call for a community choir to record Retro Text the Nation jingle a couple of weeks ago, here's the choir that I run on Saturday singing my arrangement of it. We rehearse on Saturday mornings in Baldock in Hertfordshire. We have members ranging from 11 to 50-something years old. I've got nothing but praise, and that was fantastic. And... very unique and brilliant, and thank you so much. Is that
even the word unique
at all? Come on, I can't. You got to be. I'm falling into the Simon Cowell trap now, aren't I?
Words like special, unique, unusual, things like that, you just got to avoid. Sincerely, we're very touched that you guys would get it together.
Camden.
And thank you so much, Charlie, for organising it. That's amazing. And please don't let our stupidity put anyone else off doing something similar with the Text the Nation jingle, or indeed any other jingle on this programme.
Podcast. That is all there is of the podcast. It is all over.
Well, that's it for our podcast this week, folks. Our last regular podcast for quite some time. Next week, of course, we'll be at Glastonbury. There'll be two podcasts available, one on Sunday evening and one the following Monday evening. But if you are going to be joining us at the festival, then do please make yourselves known somehow. We want to meet you guys from Black Squadron. Maybe you can come along and Digi Squadron and all the other squadrons.
Phantom Squadron.
Yeah.
Globe Squadron. Have to check the Wikipedia page to get the full rundown.
Lazy Squadron, anything like that. If you listen to this show and you're at Glastonbury, let's hook up somehow. The best chance you have to do that, I would say, is by meeting us at the comedy tent, where we'll be reading out some made-up jokes that you guys have sent in. That'll be sometime between 4 and 6 p.m. on the Saturday. We'll narrow it down a bit nearer the time, if you're listening. But...
Adam just died. He just died. That's really sad. He was in the middle of a link as well. That was what was it. I just looked round and I thought, what's happening? Adam's gone quiet. And I looked round and his head, his eyes had rolled into his head and his cheeks were like inflated, obviously, with the gas that's released when someone dies.
The gas isn't released immediately when someone dies.
Well, with you, it was. That was so weird.
My corpse immediately started floating in the air like a barrage balloon.
And he just died. It was sad. But then moments later, he started talking from beyond the grave.
The both of us are working quite hard at the moment during the week, and my brain just shuts down like after the show sometimes.
I know what you mean.
Apologies, listeners.
Where are we now?
We're at the end of our podcast, man, and we have to say, have a good week.
Okay, thanks for listening, and we will hopefully see you at Glastonbury, but the majority of you won't be able to have got Glastonbury tickets because it's sold out very fast, so please join us live on the radio. Thanks.
Take care. Love you. Bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed the Adam and Joe podcast, then why not try the John Richardson podcast? Download it now. bbc.co.uk/6music.
Smooth sounds, smooth talking. Ooh, that's smooth. Like a smooth made from fruit. Mmm, smooth. Tasty.
I just don't know what to say when you do this.
Neither do I even.
I just go blank.
Yeah.
Got no idea what to
do. Filled with rage, like a little red mist.
No, not with rage. Just nothing.
Boredom.
Blankness, emptiness.
Emptiness.
Barren tundra.
Tundra.
Is that how you say it?
Tundra.
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 That's how I say it.